to wait for the students from the college. Just one second. Right. Maybe we could just restore order here, and if Bill Hess would promise to stay away from the Coke machine for a few minutes. Right.
Hi, Mike. After listening to the testimony this afternoon, I think there's been some disadvantages to the answer bill, which is dividing the village people. Whereas before it used to be ours, now it's I, mine, or this corporation's, or the other corporations. And I think there's going to be a lot of competition between corporations. And with 1991 coming up, I think there's going to be a lot of people who will want to sell their shares. Although a lot of people, shareholders, feel strongly about the land and preserving the land, a lot of shareholders don't connect the two, that the shares go hand in hand with the land. And that way, not connecting the shares to the land, I think some shareholders would be willing to sell their shares, although they wouldn't want to lose the land. I think the important thing to do is, if there's going to be any changes, is to separate the land from the shares. This is my personal feeling. And getting the 19, the afterborns enrolled. I think the way some afterborns are getting their shares now is by inheritance, and I think that should be continued. I feel that although I have three children, one is a shareholder and two aren't shareholders, I see no difference in them, and I see that two non-shareholders feel as native as the shareholder, just as native as the others, and I think it's really not important to them now, but later on it might be. I think the passage of the land claims was the culprit of the oil companies. If it wasn't for the oil, I think there wouldn't have been a passage of the native land claims. And Congress, after dealing with the Lower 48 Indians, wanted to do something different. But village people weren't prepared for corporations or corporate structures, because some villages now aren't even prepared, haven't even selected their lands, the smaller corporations. And I find with Bethel Native Corporation, there's a lot of competition between villages, but we've had a lot of opposition from our regional corporation.
A lot of what?
Opposition.
Opposition.
Or not necessarily opposition, but we haven't gotten the assistance from the regional corporation, which I understand is supposed to be aiding the village corporations. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks very much, Ms. Cook.
Thank you.
Well, anybody else like to say a word this afternoon? Okay. I understand some more students are coming, so let's take a break for a few minutes till everybody arrives. Welcome to Mr. Morgan and the students from the college. I'll just tell you a little bit about what we're doing. I said this earlier today, but no reason why I can't repeat it. My name is Tom Berger, and I've been traveling around the state to see what Alaska Native people and other Alaskans think about the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. And this is the 60th hearing that we've held, and it's the last one that we're going to hold in Alaska. And that means we've been already now to 60 villages and towns around the state and every region. And more than 1,400 Alaska Natives and other people have testified. And I've been asking people to tell me what they think about ANCSA, about the land claim settlement, about the corporations, the regional corporations, the village corporations. What difference has the land claim settlement meant to you? Has it made a difference in your life? What things did you expect it would do? What are the good things about the land claim settlement? What are the bad things? And then there's the question of 1991, when you'll be able to sell your shares. What do you think should happen then? Should Alaska Natives have the right to sell their shares in 1991? If outsiders bought those shares, bought a majority of shares in a Native corporation, then they would own the corporation and the land, and it wouldn't be a Native corporation, and that wouldn't be Native land anymore. So on the one hand, you have to weigh the right that people may say they should have. You know, I've got these shares in Chilista, I've got these shares in my village corporation, I didn't get anything out of this, I don't get any dividends, so why shouldn't I be able to sell these and buy myself a snowmobile or a truck or something? On the other hand, if a majority of Alaska Natives in a corporation sell their shares, then they lose their corporation, they lose their land, because that's the way the corporate system works. So that's a tough question for people to think about. Then there's the question of the children born since 1971. Should they participate in the settlement in some way? And if they are given shares, their children, most of them, born since 1971, they don't have any money, can't pay for shares. So if they are given shares free of charge, then the shares that you hold in your corporation will be diminished in value. So that's another question that people have to think about. We've had people all over the state, hundreds and hundreds of Alaska Native people, say the important thing is to keep the land. We don't want to see that land lost. We don't want that land to slip out of Native ownership. So there's really two approaches to the question how to keep the land in Native ownership. One idea that people put forward is they say, well, let's make sure that Alaska Natives can't sell their shares in the corporations to non-Natives. Then the corporations will always be Native corporations. The land will always be Native land. The other line of thought, the other idea is, well, maybe we should transfer the land from the corporations and turn it over to our tribal governments, our IRA governments, our traditional councils, and there it'll be safe because you can't take over a tribal government. The idea is that the tribal governments would own the land and it would remain perpetually in Native ownership in that way. And people have talked about those ideas here this afternoon. Now, the only other thing I should tell you is that I'm not here representing the United States government, and I wasn't asked to come here by the state of Alaska either. I'm traveling around the state because I was asked to do so by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indians, is also sponsoring this commission. So I'm going to write a report that will come out in September, and it'll be based on what you people have told me at these meetings. And I'll make recommendations based on your testimony. And I hope those recommendations will be useful to you in deciding what you're going to do to protect your land and your future. So that's all I've got to say. And if you would like to say something, maybe you wouldn't mind coming up to this chair by these microphones so that everything you say will be taken down on tape and can be part of the permanent record of the testimony given at these meetings. If you've got any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Mr. Morgan was here earlier, and he testified, and about 15 other people did also this afternoon, so we've had a very worthwhile afternoon of testimony. Yes, Mr. Richards, would you like to testify?
Thank you, Justice Berger. My name is Tom Richards, Jr. I'm Executive Vice President of the Association of Village Council Presidents, AVCP. I have with me today Mr. John Paul Jones. John Paul Jones is Tribal Operations Officer for AVCP. We have a prepared written statement, which is rather lengthy, and I think I could perhaps just read the cover letter and reference the authority for the statement. Okay. And if you have any questions, you've been provided unofficial copy of the statement in the past. However, we have with us today a policy statement on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and tribal governments, which was adopted as official policy of AVCP by action of the AVCP Special 1991 Convention, which met at Aniak, Alaska, March 1 and 2, 1985. A certified copy of the convention resolution adopting this policy statement prefaces the statement itself. It's convention resolution number 85-3-01, adopted May 2, 1985 at Aniak, AVCP Special Convention. March 2, thank you, John. We request that this policy statement be made part of your hearing record, and also look forward to any comments and advice you and the commission may have for ABCP and our members in your report. On behalf of our member Native communities, ABCP thanks you and your staff and your sponsoring organizations, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, and the World Council of Indigenous Peoples for your extensive review of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and related issues. In addition to adoption of this policy statement, the Association of Village Council Presidents took several actions related to ANCSA and 1991 issues during our recent convention last weekend. Among these is a directive from the member Native communities that ABCP seek a delay in the formal approval of 1991 positions as proposed for adoption by the Alaska Federation of Natives. In part, the delay is sought in order to permit review and approval of 1991 policies by the Native communities, the villages themselves. ABCP further believes it will be prudent to avoid making a final decision on 1991 proposals until the Alaska Native Review Commission has completed its work and has issued its report. And I will read just the authorization for the statement into the record. And maybe if you have questions about the policy itself, Mr. Jones and I would be pleased to answer them. Convention Resolution Number 85-03-01, adopted March 2, 1985, by the ABCP Special 1991 Convention Resolution. Whereas ABCP member Native communities, as tribes with unresolved claims against the United States, have not consented to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act terms and consider such claims are valid existing rights as defined by Sections 11 and 17 of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And whereas ABCP's draft policy statement on ANCSA and tribal government is consistent with the concerns and beliefs of ABCP member villages, now therefore be it resolved that the ABCP 1991 Convention hereby adopts the draft policy statement on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act as the official policy of ABCP concerning ANCSA, and be it further resolved that the ABCP 1991 Convention hereby authorizes the chairman to appoint a litigation committee of village representatives to work with ABCP's executive board, administration, and general counsel to research and plan a lawsuit challenging ANCSA settlement provisions on behalf of member tribal governments, except that final determination on filing such suit is reserved to the 1985 ABCP Fall Convention. Thank you, Mr. Justice. I think you've had perhaps a chance to review our draft policies. And these were adopted through formal action of the convention after several years of review, culminating in special convention last Friday and Saturday.
Yes, I was at the convention and read the policy statement. As I understand it, the position is that since ANCSA said that it was not intended to override valid existing rights, the tribal governments which pre-existed ANCSA may well be in a position to assert that their rights as they existed prior to 1971 can still be asserted today. Is that really the position in a nutshell without trying to start in with the Northwest Ordinance and come up to date?
Essentially, that's correct. Probably expound on that just maybe in one or two sentences.
Yeah, please do.
The land claims themselves were brought by petitions submitted by the village councils to the Secretary of the Interior over a long period of time. And the claims were brought by tribal governments by the village councils. They were the makers of the land claims. Congress, in adopting ANCSA, conferred the proceeds of ANCSA upon creatures created under laws of the state of Alaska, which were not the tribal entities which brought the land claims. And the rest of the theory, I think you understand.
If you were to succeed, if your litigation committee approved this and a lawsuit were brought and you succeeded, the outcome would be that the corporations would remain in existence, that is, the native corporations, but to the extent that their land is land that was that belonged to tribal governments before ANCSA, they would be, so to speak, shorn of their land, and it would revert to the tribal governments. Do I understand result, the likely result of this, assuming it were successful?
The legal advice was that we have is that the corporations and their legal standing would not be affected by the outcome of proposed litigation. The lands, we don't know what remedies the courts might provide.
And does the claim of the tribal governments extend beyond what we call ANCSA lands? Would it apply to land that the state has been allowed to choose or that the federal government has chosen?
I think it would extend beyond the village corporation lands that have been selected through land claims. So the village corporations were given so much land, and in some cases they were given three townships within the wildlife refuge, and they were forced to just choose a few of the subsistence area lands, and then their deficiency lands were put to some place where they never even gotten to. So those earlier claims would be indeed be larger than the ones that were selected by the village corporations.
I'm glad that you're submitting this officially to be a part of the record, and I should say that I appreciate all the assistance that the commission has had from AVCP, and indeed we do appreciate it. I want to say that while we're here in Bethel, and since I'll never get a chance to say it at a hearing again, since this is the last hearing, at least in any of the villages or towns. I wonder if I could ask you a couple of questions, and if you don't want to answer them, don't feel free to not to. But in some of the villages I've been to, people say, "Well, look, we think that the subsurface resources should belong to the villages and not to the regional corporations." And we've heard that in this region. In fact, some people here this afternoon said they regarded their regional corporation as far away, distant, and remote. And has AVCP ever taken a position on that, or do either of you as individuals have any opinion to express?
This issue underwent extensive discussion on the last day of the special convention, Saturday afternoon in Aniak. There was a proposal that as part of the 1991 process, AVCP encourage or seek the transfer of the subsurface resources now held by Calista Corporation to the tribal governments. And after extensive discussion and after some comparative analysis of Calista's resources and the other resources located within the region that are not owned by any native corporation, it was decided that the same circumstance applied to the lands, the subsurface estate presently held within the Yukon-Kuskokwim National Wildlife Refuge. So there was an amendment made to the original proposal for the transfer, to seek to amend ANCSA to transfer Calista subsurface to the tribal governments such that the policy now states that ABCP shall seek an amendment to ANCSA to transfer the subsurface estate of the National Wildlife Refuge areas from the federal government to the traditional and IRA tribal councils.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question. I appreciate that the tendency of AVCP's thinking is to bring the land under the tribal governments and thus avoid all the questions of share transfer and all this sort of thing. But have you, as individuals at least, if you care to comment, considered this question of share transfers? In other words, if there are no restrictions placed on the sale of shares, what do you think will happen to the shares if they go on the market, if they can be bought and sold?
I think that there's a great feeling in the villages, at least in the region, that they would like to have the shares. If the shares were to go on market, they would like to have the village corporations to have the first right of refusal. If one of our people were to go and sell their shares, but we have seen, for instance, the fishing permits, both on Kuskokwim River and the Yukon River, that have been put on the market. And if that's any indication of what's going to be happening, if the shares are put on the market, then we will indeed will have some people that are really in hardship. Now that we're getting into a cash economy more and more every day, that there will be a tendency of the people to put their shares on the market. That's my personal feeling.
Yeah, well, we were in Bristol Bay last week, and the transfer of limited entry permits from native people to non-natives is remarkable. I mean, it's alarming. Those people are alarmed down there. You've seen the same thing happen up here, I guess.
We have. But I think it's getting to a point now where there's some interest by some agencies to look at this closely, and where before, especially for the permits in Lower Yukon, where they're selling from, they were selling about 20,000, and our native people did not have that much money available. But through the state, with some loan programs that the state has, and the natives were able to transfer the permits from native to native instead of going from native to Anchorage or outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, and I'll make that part of the record, indeed.
Thank you very much.
Well, we have a, if any of the students would like to speak, you're welcome. If you would rather stay in your chair and speak from there, we actually have a portable mic, kind of like Donahue, and we can take it around. You could just see if anybody wants to say anything or ask a question. Why don't you, just see if there.
My name is Mary Gregory. I'm from Bethel, originally from Ripnok, and I'm part of this class. And I think I speak for the rest of them when I say we don't know much about 1991, other than the shares will be allowed to be sold, because we did not have that much education on the land claims, other than the people who are working directly with Native Corporation and the corporations. The rest of the shareholders do not have that privilege. And I think we need to know more about what's in the land claims before we can talk about our concerns. People who do know about it can speak for it. But for me and the rest of us, I don't think we can.
Well, you're adopting the position that you don't know anything about it, and that pretty well. Well, maybe I could just add a few things then while you're all here, and the ANCSA, the Land Claims Settlement. It's called ANCSA. It's an abbreviation. Was really the first great land claim settlement of the modern era, and in it Alaska Natives received $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land. Now, to many Alaska Natives have said at these hearings, well, Alaska belonged to us before the Russians came and then the Americans. You know, it's fine to say this was a great settlement and a generous one because we got 44 million acres of land, but that's only 10% of the land area of Alaska, and it used to be ours anyway, the whole thing. All of Alaska was ours. So when we got, in the end, 10% under the land claim settlement, that isn't as generous as you might think at first glance. The money was a lot of money, $962.5 million, but the money really didn't go to Alaska Native people as individuals, and the land didn't either. What Congress said was, well, we want you to become businessmen and investors. We want you to come into the mainstream of corporate America. So they said, you have to set up corporations, and we'll make you shareholders in these corporations. And that's why most people got 100 shares in their village corporation and 100 shares in their regional corporation, and the money in the land was turned over to the corporations so that they could manage it, and they could invest the money, and they could use the profits that they made to pay dividends to Alaska Natives, and so that they could set up businesses and employ Alaska Natives in the businesses. And that's what they were trying to do. And what we've been looking at is, well, is that what people wanted? Is that what really happened? Did very many Alaska Natives get jobs in the Native corporations? Do the Native corporations pay dividends to people? Do they get money from these corporations? And we've been trying to find out the answers to those questions. Then the other big question that you asked about is 1991. And of course, back in 1971, Congress said, well, these are going to be Native corporations for 20 years. But after that, we're going to throw them open so that anybody can become a member of these corporations, Native or non-Native. And that's why people around the state, Native people, are angry, the ones who come to these hearings, because they say this was supposed to be a settlement. It's called the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, 1971. But it didn't settle anything, because we got the land, but now we could lose it all after 1991. Well, that isn't a settlement. A settlement is supposed to settle things. This didn't settle anything. And so they feel very angry about that. And in 1991, the shares that Alaska Natives have in their corporations can be bought and sold, just like shares in any other corporation. And that means that a big company, an oil company, or somebody from Anchorage with a lot of money, from Seattle, from New York, could come up here and if they wanted to take over one of the Native corporations and acquire their land, maybe they thought there might be oil underneath the land, they could try to buy up a majority of shares in one of the Native corporations. And if they succeeded, then that Native corporation wouldn't be a Native corporation anymore, and the land wouldn't be Native land anymore. So that's what 1991 represents, and it's something people are concerned about. And that's why this afternoon we had people talking about restricting the sale of shares, or putting the land into the ownership of the tribal government, various ways of making sure that the land stays in Native ownership. I know that, you know, the more you talk about angst, the more complicated it gets, so I think I'll stop there because I may just be confusing you. Well, Asta, yes, here's a question over here. Hey, Stu, I'll bring the mic over.
I have a comment rather than a question. Like you say, all this is done in the Western way, the corporate way of doing things. I mean, take a look at it. It seems so unfair. We were living a subsistence way of life, and we never had corporate businesses before. And then, some of our people were afraid for our people that everything was going to be taken away from them, like the Indians did in what was done to Lower 48 Indians. And so they tried to do something about that. And so the government and the oil companies, whoever was involved in there, says, yeah, well, if you want it, we'll give you this. And it seems to some of us who are just sitting out in the rural Alaska, say, here's here's what the United States says. Okay, fine, we'll give you the land, but only for a few years. Here you have it. But 1991 comes, you know, there are ways to get that land back. And we'll do it this way. And some of us, some of the people who might have been sitting drawing up the agreement might have thought, well, yeah, if you give us enough time, maybe it'll work. But for so many of us who don't know anything about that corporate way of life, that Western way of life, have a very hard time turning that around to make sense to us. A lot of times, when this was going on, we were just out here doing subsistence way of life, and the urban natives and all those other people were trying the best way they can. And one of the things was, you know, select your land. And I remember at the time I had gotten out of college and I was supposed to know something about the Western world, right? I hardly knew. All I know is, you know, go down to some office and sign up for a piece of land and take a map with you. I went down 5 times, and the people that were supposed to be working there didn't have the maps, parts of the maps. They didn't really know how to read maps. And so at that time I was traveling very extensively during the time that this was supposed to be going. So consequently I never got my land. But all those other people who don't know anything about this way of life, you know, how much more in the dark they were during the time of land selection. And consequently, because they didn't know, they missed out. A whole lot of people missed out on selecting land. I mean, that's another matter too. But looking at the corporate way of life, again, going back to looking at it, I mean, the United States or the government or whoever was there were telling the people to understand something that's not within their realm of culture. A group, I think the sociologist would say, the group of people who are not exposed to another culture will not understand that other culture only in terms of what they know themselves within that culture. And there was nothing within our culture that resembled the corporate way of doing business. And it would have taken very long time for us to understand. Even when you look back at the village and you look at, you know, our people trying to hold on to those jobs and trying to make those local corporations work, there's so much beyond what beyond everyday operations of a corporation. And what's going to happen when the time comes for when shares and everything else opens up? I mean, what kind of strength are we going to have when we don't know this corporate way of life? And big businesses already know what to do, and we don't. They know how to plan ahead. They know how to build up money and then take it back again so you go bankrupt, so they can buy you again. We don't know about those kinds of things. So it's, you know, living back here and knowing just a little bit is scary. For some people who know nothing about it, are just there in the dark, don't know how to comment on it, don't know how to say, let's do it this way better because this way is not good, because they can't see that way. They don't know how to make a comment on that, the other people. We who know a little bit, I mean, a very, very little bit, can make some kind of a comment, although we don't all understand the corporate way of life and and all that kind of thing. So I think in that way it's unfair that we were put in this position to make those choices when we don't, from our own culture, when we didn't have that understanding. And if they want us to do that, I don't know why we felt we had to do that. Maybe something else, some other way of doing it is better, the kind of way that we understand within our own culture. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.